Good morning. This morning, we're going to talk about radical thanksgiving, radical thankfulness. And as we do this, I want to begin by asking you the question that I've asked myself and others have asked me. How many Thanksgiving, quote, Thanksgiving dinners have you eaten in the last week? Okay, so just lift up your hands. Okay, we got 0, 1, 3. Mom has 3. 1, 1, 1, 2, 2. We got some 2s. Has anybody got one to go? 4. We got 4. We have a winner right back in the back. That's radical thankfulness right there when you're eating 4 Thanksgiving meals. Or how many of you would know Thursday afternoon, you know, the Cowboys? How about them Cowboys? They won their 31st Thanksgiving Day game out of 47. So they're 31 and 46. They're pretty much radical winners on Thanksgiving Day. And so, but none of that's really what we're going to talk about. We have this other question for the day. And the question for the day has to do with our abundance or our blessing. How should we deal with blessing? Or how should we treat our abundance? And so we're going to talk about that today in several different ways. And the first thing is, our first step would be to claim it. And so the question again, I'm going to ask you a little bit of response here. Are you blessed? How many of you say, yeah, are you blessed? Are we blessed? Okay, just give it a, yeah. Somebody, you might want to start doing a dance. You're so blessed. But how about this? Are you rich? How many of us would say, yes, I'm rich? Yes, we're rich. And so claiming this is, I think, important. And some of these things are so obvious, you know, and yet sometimes in our lives, when we walk around and actually live it, it's difficult to feel blessed all the time, right? Sometimes we don't, especially sometimes it's hard to feel rich all the time. And Sally's already talked about that this morning, about if you start comparing, it kind of on your rich, if you're rich or not, depends a lot on who you're comparing yourself to, right? So what Sally talked about was a place where they have a dollar, what was it? A day. Okay. Well, we know these statistics. Like, for instance, you probably know that if you have a smartphone, like I do, that my dad bought for me a couple of years ago. I don't have a 7, though, Dad. Just wondering. Just saying. Just saying. But that's for 70% of the world. What it costs to have a smartphone is a year's salary. A year's salary. Yeah, we're rich. Or if you own a car, you're in the top 10% in the world. An interesting comment from an international student at ACU a couple years ago. She said, "Wow, you Americans, you have houses for your cars." I thought, yeah, we're blessed. We're blessed and we're rich. But another thing, another step, I think, would be to admit that sometimes abundance can be a problem. Now, one of the things I want to say right off the bat, a lot of times I feel, and maybe you do too, when someone starts talking about being rich, all of a sudden I start feeling guilty. Okay? This is not about that. This is just the facts. And in that way, sometimes people slant biblical teachings about wealth and make it synonymous with greed. Wealth and greed, not the same things. So a person could definitely be wealthy, which is what I think we are, and not be greedy. So I want to be clear about that. And I want to say also that I'm not just talking about money today. I'm talking about blessing. For instance, just this idea of blessing compared to wealth compared to the rest of the world. I'm blessed by being born in America. And I'm blessed not only to be born in America, to be born into the family that I was born into. Because a lot of people born in America still not have the blessing that I do. And I'm not only blessed to be born in the family because of their financial wealth, but because of their love. And honestly, because of just their, you know, awesomeness. And I recognize this again today in Sally. And I want to tell y'all, y'all amaze me all the time as a church. And again, one of the reasons why I would love to be part of making this church grow, because what you got is good. So here's the scenario that would be mind-blowing in almost every church I know. Is you come to class, you're getting ready to prepare for class, and at this moment you find the teacher of the class who's prepared is not going to be there. And so who is prepared? Well, it seemed like, honestly, almost anybody could have been prepared today because of what you did. But I thought, my sister Sally, she says, okay, I'll do it, right? Awesomeness. I mean, I'm born into a great family. And many of you were too. And yet, we're not always, we got some issues. I got some family issues. You do too, probably. Not perfect, but still, just great. And so I want to emphasize, though, that sometimes wealth and blessing can be a problem. And we live in a culture that claims that no amount is enough. No amount is enough. One of the things we know about money, just money, we're going to talk about other things besides money, but just money, we know that Jesus spoke warnings about. And it's kind of like, well, if there's a warning about it? Well, it's kind of neutral. It's not good. It's not bad. But it is powerful. Okay? It is powerful. So powerful that Jesus compared it in Matthew 6. He said, don't worship it like you do God. Serve two masters. Like money could become a master. So we know it's powerful, and some of that power could be negative. And as a matter of fact, often we live in this world where the pursuit of money consumes people. And I would say that most of us have stepped into that a little bit ourselves, where that's all we could think about is, what am I going to do? How am I going to make it? How am I going to make it better? Again, some interesting kinds of surveys is one done by Boston College just a couple of years ago. They took 165 super rich families, which nowadays I always love to substitute the word Uber because it's just fun to say, right? Because it's nearly like goober. But Uber rich, the super rich. They took 165 of them, and they were going to do some surveys. But to think about what the 165 super rich were like, just to give you an idea about that, 125 of them had a net worth of $250 million. This is what they're talking about, super rich. And the average among them all was $78 million net worth. And one of the questions they asked was, what would it take for you to feel really secure? Right? And across the board, their answers were about one quarter more. Like, right? I think I would feel kind of secure if you'd give me just one of your 78 million. I'd feel plenty secure, right? But all of us kind of fall into that a little bit. Like, for instance, what if I said that this morning for Christmas shopping, yes, glad we came to church today. Or if for the year 2017, we're going to double your salary. Now, 2018, we're going back. But 2017. And the question would be, would it be enough? And eventually, no. Because that's the way kind of money works. And you know, there's the famous quote by John D. Rockefeller, supposedly the richest man basically ever, even though we have a lot of people who have more millions, but for the time, and this is the turn of the century, when they asked him, how much is enough? His famous quote was, I brought Dad just for that. Just a little bit more. Just a little bit more. And so this is kind of where I want us to claim it, admit that it can be a problem. And part of the problem is I never have enough. But it's not just money. So I'm moving ahead from the, I can't get no satisfaction from the. So I want you to answer this question personally right now. Okay? I don't have enough what? So mom and dad, they watch TV differently, but they often share the same TV. And so dad is watching he's going to zero in on some news, right? News shows. Mom is game shows. Okay? Game shows and news. I'd much rather be with mom usually because it's they always end up kind of fun and happy. Well, one of our favorites is Family Feud. Family Feud. All the iterations of it, too. You know, like she goes back and watches reruns from long ago, even though to right now. Family Feud. And you all know the gist of the show is there's a survey done ahead of time. And you're asking how many people in the survey picked this or this or this. Okay, so we're going to play a little round of Family Feud here today. All right. And this side is going to be the praise team side, okay? And this side is going to be the not praise team side, okay. All right? And so here we go. Over here, you're going to say the answer to this question, the survey says, what would the answer be? I don't have enough time, okay? They said time. Okay, you can't say time, but you can say what else? The answer, I don't have enough
money.
Well, actually, I did a survey about this, and about a little over 100 rounded off to it. And this is what the survey said. Time, money, energy, and then confidence. Interestingly, confidence. And there were some other outliers, you know. And some of them I kind of lumped together with money. Like somebody wrote on their Cocoa Puffs, they needed more Cocoa Puffs. I never have enough Cocoa Puffs. And I wasn't sure if that was a problem of time. I don't have enough time to go buy them, or I don't have money to buy them. I didn't know about that. So I threw them out. But I want to say something a little bit about time, and then I want to go back to our kind of the main point today is about money and the and the blessing, the radical thanksgiving I want us to think about. First of all, this is going to be the sermon on time later. Okay, so it's not today, but later. But these are just some thoughts. I think we should say that one of our problems is we spend our time foolishly. We spend our time foolishly. Second, we don't value rest. Or pace. We are a group of people, and this goes along with that, we are impatient people. We want everything now, which causes us to then, that impacts how we don't value rest. And another thing, and this is kind of odd too, is we're also lazy. And this connects to both how we spend time foolishly, how we don't value rest, but we also don't get enough done. It seems like not enough done. But another thing is, sometimes we believe that everything that has to be done, we have to do it. Or the flip side of that coin, which is equally not a good way to think, is the idea that it's too much to be done, someone else is going to have to do it. I'll leave it to someone else. A couple of quotes. One is... is this quote from Socrates said, beware of the barrenness of a busy life. One of the things I think about that is I also say being busy is a poor substitute for relationship. But a lot of times we medicate our loneliness with busyness. But one of the things that personally, man, this knocked me right in the nose. I've often had this, students will come to me and they want to talk to me, and they would say this. This is how they would begin their request to talk to me. They would say, I know you're really busy, but. And it's like I have this reputation of being too busy for people. It's really smack in the face for me. But really, I want us to move on to, I want to end up talking about money. But this idea about time, I want to leave you with this. I believe this is a word from God, that I have enough time to do everything God wants me to do. And often I think when people complain about being too busy, it's I want to turn it almost a complaint against God. Like, God, you've given me not enough time to live the life you want me to live. I can't do this. I can't do this. I'm just too busy. Well, like, God's given us time, and He's given it to us in certain ways, in certain amounts. But another part is God has given me time to do everything that God wants me to do today. There's a really important place we have in our lives of planning and doing things, looking ahead to the future. But a lot of times that we get a conflict with about what we're doing in our future and a sort of anxiety about the future that almost paralyzes us for today. I don't know if you've ever experienced that. My fear of the future has paralyzed me sometimes for today. I think God gives me enough time to do everything He wants me to do. Maybe not everything I want to do, but everything He wants me to do today. But back to this is the other thing. I think God has created us to live abundantly under the protection of a rhythm of rest. We're going to talk in the future about the idea of a rhythm of rest, but I just want to plant that seed today. All right. I want us to think about money for a second. So here we go.
Okay, I want to make sure you're ready, Jerry, because here it is. Show me the money.
Okay, show you the money.
No, not show you the money. Show me the money.
Show me.
No, to me. Show
me.
Me.
Money.
Just doing the scene from John.
Do the scene.
Just doing your line.
If you're gonna do it, let me do it right. Show me the money.
Okay. Show me the money.
Show
me.
Congratulations, you're still my agent.
I don't know if y'all have seen the movie Jerry Maguire. It's 15 years old or so. But the thought, the phrase, show me the money, is often used when we're talking about some kind of adventure, some kind of plan, something we're going to do next. Hey, show me the money. Some way we're spending our time and what reward we want for me. Show me the money. Show me the money. And this often is a motivator for us in our lives in ways that may be a little bit dangerous. You know, and I want to get off of Jerry Maguire, show me the money, and hear maybe a little bit from God who says, show me the way. Not show me the money, show me the way. How can I deal with money? What's the appropriate way? And for me, the teaching is throughout the Bible. This is throughout the Bible's topic, but I want to focus on 1 Timothy chapter 6. 1 Timothy chapter 6. Now, what I've done in my own house, I don't know if any of y'all have done something like this, but I have sometimes cash hidden in my house. And so I have a checking account, I have a savings account, I have some investments, but I also have some cash. I have some cash that's like open and ready for me to put into my wallet, which for decades has been a rubber band, my rubber band wallet. But I also have some cash hidden in my house. If something ever happens to me, I'm going to tell you where the money is hidden. It's in the different Bibles around my house. It's always hidden in 1 Timothy 6, okay? So I've got $20 bills. I've got some other bills, different Bibles around my house. If I find it missing, I'll know, you know, where to come look. But we're going to read from 1 Timothy 6, and we're going to start in verse 3, okay? So these are the teachings. These are the things you are to teach and insist on. And if anyone teaches otherwise, comes down to say, that they have an unhealthy interest in controversies and quarrels about words that result in envy, strife, malicious talk, evil suspicions, and constant friction between people of corrupt mind who have been robbed of the truth and who think that godliness is a means to financial gain. So this is the first place it talks about money, that godliness is a way to get financial gain, which is why we all came to church today, right? Because we want to get rich. Maybe that's not about us, but for some people it could be. But then he says, but godliness with contentment is great gain. For we were brought into this world, you know, we brought nothing into this world, and we can take nothing out of it. But if we have food and clothing, we'll be content with that. I'm wondering about some of the people who live in the country talked about. I know this is true about some mission trips I've been on where I saw people who were in what I would call dire poverty, and yet they lived life with great joy. They didn't have much, but they did have joy. I don't know, but this is what this seems to say. If we have food and clothing, we'll be content with that. And those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap into many foolish and harmless desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. Now notice it doesn't say money's the root, but the love of money. And it's all kinds of evil. And it says some people, eager for money, have wandered from the faith and have pierced themselves with many griefs. Okay, wow. If I'm reading this, I want to say it's mostly about money. It's bad news. This is bad news about money, and if I was thinking what Paul's going to tell Timothy next, Paul is going to say, based on these verses, I would assume that he's going to give Timothy the same instructions that he gave the rich young ruler in Luke 18. Now, you know the story of the rich young ruler. The guy comes and asks Jesus, what I need to do? He says, you need to obey the commands. He says, I've obeyed all the commands. Then you need to go and what? Sell everything. Sell everything. So, man, after I got this warning that I just got from Paul about money, I'm expecting he's going to say, go sell everything. But he doesn't. Not what Paul does. As a matter of fact, he does something maybe quite almost the opposite. He says instead, command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant or to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain. Would we say wealth is uncertain? Have it today, not tomorrow. But to put their hope in God. So he's not saying sell everything. He says don't be arrogant. Okay, what else? Don't put your hope in wealth, but put your hope in God, who provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Our enjoyment. So if you have been provided with wealth, and all of us in here said yes, for a variety of reasons, we said, yes, we got stuff. What should we do? Well, we should enjoy it. That's why God, through my dad, gave me the cell phone, for me to enjoy it. That's why I'm going to ride home with Dad today in his car. Ride smooth. For my enjoyment. That's why I'm not going to have to take the bus. He's provided these things for my enjoyment. And he says also command them to do good. To be rich in good deeds. Now who is this about? Who is this command to? The people who are rich. In other words, you know, us. Command them to do good and to be rich in good deeds and be generous and willing to share. Now, one of the problems that money has, one of the ways it becomes a god, is when we begin to think, I might not have enough for tomorrow, so I can't be generous today. Right? And so here we are. Be generous. If you've been given wealth, all of us have, thank God for it. Don't put our hope in it. Put our hope in God. If we lose it tomorrow, which some of us have already experienced that. Have some of you experienced a time when you were better off financially and now not so good off? And yet God, our hope is not in our wealth. Our hope is in God. And so be willing to share. In this way, they'll lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age so that they will take hold of the life that is truly life. That is truly life. Radical thanksgiving is connected to joy. Now, I want us to also now look at Philippians 4. In Philippians 4, there's another clue about wealth. Rejoice in the Lord always, it says. I'll say it again, rejoice. Let your gentleness be evident to all, the Lord is near. Now, here's one. I always struggle with this teaching because God seems to be here commanding me to be happy. Well, He kind of is. He says, rejoice. I want you to rejoice. Well, I don't feel like it. Sometimes, have you ever had to do something you don't feel like doing? Yeah, but this seems to be dealing with my emotions. And can I control them? Can I make myself feel joyful when I don't have joy? Well, this is what it seems to say. So it says, don't be anxious, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, we're emphasizing that today, present your request to God. And then in verse 12, he says, I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty, and I've learned the secret. Okay? And unlike Kentucky Fried Chicken, he's going to give you the secret of the secret sauce. Here's the secret. What's the secret of being content in any and every situation? Well, it goes back to being thankful and presenting everything to God in prayer. But especially I want to focus on this idea of being thankful. There's a direct connection between joy and giving thanks. Between joy, not your circumstance and giving thanks, not your circumstance and giving joy, but between joy and giving thanks. So here we were at Thanksgiving. Some of you ate something that looked like that. Now, I looked for some different pictures because I didn't have a Thanksgiving that really looked like that. The turkey was nice, but all these other things, I didn't have that. I had more like, instead of grapes or tomatoes or whatever, you know what? I had stuffing, corn pudding, mashed potatoes, green bean casserole. I had some spinach casserole yesterday. Anyway, all good. But it's not really the kind of Thanksgiving I want us to focus on either. But I do want to think about the time of Thanksgiving. Here, this is from Jesus Calling, November 22nd. Sarah Young. A thankful mindset doesn't entail a denial of reality with its plethora of problems. Anytime I use the word plethora, it's a good day. A thankful mindset doesn't entail a denial of reality with its plethora of problems. Instead, it rejoices in me, your Savior, in the midst of trials and tribulations. Can you rejoice in the midst of trial and tribulations? Can you be thankful, have a thankful mindset while being totally aware of the circumstances around us? Well, Thanksgiving is an example of that. Probably you know the Thanksgiving story of the pilgrims who came, 102 of them, landed, and a year later when they had their Thanksgiving meal that we celebrate, there was 51 of them left. Can you imagine 51 funerals in a group of 102? And yet what they did at the end of that year was give thanks. You know that Thanksgiving was George Washington, when he was president, said, let's have a day. Let's have a day of Thanksgiving. They began to celebrate, and for a couple of years they did. But other presidents, not so much. For instance, Thomas Jefferson didn't like the possibility of church-state interference, that they should be separated. So he didn't want to have a day of Thanksgiving. And for several years before the Civil War, we didn't have Thanksgiving. But President Lincoln, in 1863, made the law that we're going to commemorate Thanksgiving the last Thursday of every, actually the first, it was the third Thursday of every November. 1863 was a tough year. I don't know about you, but for me, 2016 has been a really tough year. But Lincoln in 1863, gave this famous speech, the Gettysburg Address. He gave that speech 1 week before the first Thanksgiving under his, and it was, he'd given that speech at a place that looked kind of like this, a cemetery, a battlefield, where he's giving thanks in the midst of trial, in the midst of war. Earlier that year, he'd visited the battlefield itself, which looked like this. Sarah Young, don't deny. It's not a denial of reality. Being able to give thanks in hard times. And all of us are involved in that even right now. In times of loss, in times of need. This is what Paul says, I've learned the secret. What's the secret? I think it has to do with thanksgiving. Rejoice always. That seems crazy. Pray continually and give thanks. Give thanks in all circumstances. Another story from history, you may know of the story of the Ten Boone sisters, Corey Ten Boone, and the book, The Hiding Place. How many of you are kind of familiar a little bit with Corey Ten Boone? Raise your hands. And The Hiding Place. Her sister Betsy, they were a Christian, and their Christian family were hiding people who were being sought by the Gestapo, primarily Jews. And when Gestapo found out that the Ten Boons were also hiding people who they're looking for, they put them in a concentration camp. They separated their family. Their parents died. But Betsy and Corey stayed together. They were separated for a while, but then were brought back together. But when they were brought back together, it was in dire circumstances, in very difficult circumstances. And so in these very circumstances, Corey's writing the book. And Corey is the older sister who survives. Betsy doesn't. Or Betsy's the older sister, actually. But Corey is more, I'd say, practical, where Betsy is a little more positive. And sometimes, have you ever been around a person whose positivity, kind of you want to shut them, like, would you shut up? We need a little less of that positivity. Well, that's kind of how Betsy was. And she was always giving thanks. And one of her favorite verses was this verse. But in the midst of it, they were in a place, and Corey comes out, all, really? All circumstances? Because some of my circumstances really stink. But can you give thanks in a bad circumstance? This is not the Ten Boom sisters, but it's similar what life was like. And all around them is death and abuse. And we could go on and on about what it was like in the Holocaust. But they came to this one barracks, and I'm going to read some of this to you from the book. They were living in this horrible place, and they found out that their reeking straw bed platforms were swarmed with fleas. How could they live in such a place? And it was Betsy, it says, who discovered God's answer. It was this verse, rejoice always, pray constantly, give thanks in all circumstances, for this is the will of God. Betsy said, that's it, Corey. That's his answer. Give thanks in all circumstances. That's what we can do. Right now we can start to thank God for everything about this new barracks. Corey says, I stared at her and then around at the dark, foul, arid room. They thanked God for the fact that they were together. They thanked God for that they had a Bible. They even thanked God for the horror, because that way more people would be able to hear God's word. And finally, Betsy thanked God for the fleas. The fleas, Corey said, this is too much. Betsy, there is no way even God can make me grateful for a flea. She said, but it says, give thanks in all circumstances. It doesn't say in pleasant circumstances, and fleas are a part of this place. And so we stood between the tiers of bunks and gave thanks for the fleas. But this time I was sure Betsy was wrong. It turned out that Betsy wasn't wrong for two specific ways that later they came to believe that they should give thanks for the fleas. One thing is the ladies were led, the guards didn't come into their barracks. They didn't come because of the fleas, which let them read their Bible, which they'd smuggled in, and more people heard the Bible, and they were crammed in closer together, and even Betsy said, that's good too, more people can hear. But then she said, and also, you know, the guards didn't bother us. When we're out during the day, we hear these horrible stories about what the guards did to the women in the other barracks, but they never came into ours because the guards didn't want to get fleas. Thanking God even for the fleas. A thankful mindset doesn't entail a denial of reality. In the end, giving thanks is a choice. We sang a minute ago, my heart will choose to say, blessed be your name. In the good days and in the bad days. In the high times of lots of money, in the times of little money. My heart will choose to say, blessed be your name. Giving thanks is a choice. I think it becomes a way of life. And that way of life leads to joy. It's not joy first, then thanks. It's thanksgiving, a lifestyle of thanksgiving, of finding a way to give thanks in every circumstance. It's a discipline. It's a discipline like prayer. It's a discipline like spending time alone with God. It's a discipline to give thanks, not in a way that is disregarding pain. Because as you know, the Bible has high value of expressing our desire for not having pain. How long, O Lord? How long? And yet, even at the end of that psalm, Psalm 13, he says, I will give thanks to my God. I think giving thanks eventually can become a lifestyle that produces joy. And so today, we'll end singing about our good, good Father. Let's stand up and sing.